We're back here on In Focus News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, talking today here with Riley County Police Department Director Dennis Butler. Second to last appearance for Director Butler. He'll be on with us again, I believe, in January, and then we'll have to pivot in February and beyond. We'll see who the new director will be. We'll find out probably sometime in the new year. But we're still kind of looking back at 2021 today. Talking about some statistics here as far as crime is concerned. People always have an interest in this subject, especially when you get to December. And I know you provided the report at the law board meeting, I guess almost 10 days ago, December 20th. And that involved Part 1 crimes and aggravated assaults, other things like that. Are we seeing trends any different from years past? What are you seeing at the moment?
Well, we're seeing crime up a little bit in some categories compared to last year, but 2020 is always going to have an asterisk next to it just because of the lockdowns and students not being here and soldiers not being allowed to come to town, things like that. But when you compare, so a better comparison is to our five-year average for 2021, and we always do that anyway because year-to-year trends can have factors like COVID that really impact what the crime rate is, and it's not a clear measure of what's happening. So when we look at our five-year average, Part 1 crime in 2021 through November, so we don't have December statistics yet, is a little over 5% lower than the five-year average. And robberies, that's a dramatic drop, are over 28% lower than the five-year average. And the property crime component of Part 1 crime is projected, we think, to be a little over 6% below the five-year average. The one area where we're seeing a huge increase is in aggravated batteries, assaults, and that includes domestic crimes. We're seeing quite a jump there. And, you know, from a policing perspective, aside from education, which we do with domestic violence situations, it's a real challenge for us because most of these, the vast majority of these, do involve people that know each other. That's not always the case. But when people are in relationships or friendships of some kind and they become angry and don't use good coping mechanisms and then they end up assaulting, battering, or using guns, it's something that's very difficult to prevent from a policing perspective. I will make a point that, you know, over the years, especially, not especially, but since I've been in Kansas, the Kansas legislature has relaxed gun laws quite a bit. And so now citizens who don't have a criminal background can carry concealed weapons without even obtaining a permit. And the ones that do get permits usually do it because they also want to carry it out of state. And not every state recognizes that permit, but many do. But there are a lot more guns out and about. And we have a lot of people who shoot guns into the air as an intimidation tactic. We see that around Aggieville and other parts of town. We respond to the reports of gunshots. We don't find victims, but sometimes we'll find shell casings or vehicles or buildings that have been hit. Very, very dangerous situation. One of these days, you know, I fear that one of those stray bullets is going to hit an innocent person unexpectedly, and then we'll be dealing with something else. But the aggravated battery, if you think about that, the assaults, the guns, think again about what we've been seeing across the country in situations that we're not used to seeing. Think about the airline increase in attacks on airplanes and in airports. Think about what we're hearing from the medical profession about people who are, you know, in hospitals or ERs. I just can't help, and I have no data to support this. It's just my opinion that this is an indirect effect of COVID. It's an indirect effect of the national narrative criticizing the police wholesale. I think there's less respect for each other, for our differences, and for you know, the police in general. When people in prominent positions, especially elected officials, openly criticize the legitimacy of the police department, why would people who don't know any better sometimes embrace that and act accordingly? And I think there's something to that. Again, I think years down the road, we'll see some research on all of this, COVID, post-George Floyd, all of this stuff. We might see some some empirical data supporting this notion that I just described. Again, I have to emphasize I don't have any proof of this. It's just my opinion based on what I'm seeing across the country. And we're starting to see some of that kind of stuff here.
Well, I know we were in state news the other day, and this came across. This is Kansas City, Missouri, but they had one of their it was their second deadliest year on record as far as homicides are concerned. I know we're a lot smaller than Kansas City here in Manhattan, but we do have those from time to time. I can't remember a whole bunch of those this year. I know there have been a couple, but as far as homicides are concerned, the trends kind of stay right within the five-year average, would you say?
Yes. I think on average in the last 5 years, we've probably averaged one to two homicides a year. We did have a situation where we had two incidents but three victims of homicide. So that was a little unusual, and I'm not downplaying the loss of life at all in these situations. But we have not seen those spikes in homicides like what we have seen in some of the cities where the defunding movement had gained a lot of traction is still a conversation that is occurring in some cities. That's where we saw huge increases in homicides. Think about Chicago, Seattle, Portland, some other places. New York is another place where for years you didn't see that kind of thing. But it's not a coincidence, in my opinion, to see those spikes in homicides. And that, to me, is a barometer. When you see increases in homicides that dramatic, if you look at their other violent crime data, you'll see similar increases, in my opinion, if you dig into it.
Now, I woke up on December 12th, and I saw a report of a shooting in Aggieville. And I think a lot of folks probably woke up that morning and heard that, and, you know, they were trying to gather the details. Just kind of, that was the first real kind of scary situation we've had in a while here in Manhattan. And that, and I know that's still being an investigation. You can't talk a lot about that here. But have we learned... is there any extra protections that those businesses down there can do, to avoid another situation like that where a gun is brought into a business?
Well, unless a business has a sign up or they have active screening of patrons, it is very difficult to prevent the introduction of firearms into businesses. And I'm always really careful and hesitant to sit here and tell businesses how they should operate. If a business is concerned about firearms being brought into their venue, they can set up screening, with metal detectors. Hand wands are the most common to prevent that, And I understand from a business perspective why many don't like doing that, because it slows down patronage, people come and go, and it just makes it more difficult. But that is one way to try to prevent the introduction of firearms. If you talk to my officers, and I mentioned this in a comment a minute ago about shots fired out in the street, around Aggieville and other places, there's lots of guns out there. There's no question about that. We have cars broken into that are unlocked where firearms are stolen in this county, and it's not unusual anymore. It used to be. So there's lots of guns out there. From a business perspective, again, I hesitate to say do this or do that and you'll stop gun crime. But there are steps they can take to be more diligent to prevent the introduction of firearms into their businesses. And they know what those steps are, so I'll leave it at that.
All right. It's one thing if it's outside a business, but it's another thing when it happens inside a business. It's a lot easier to prevent that than it would be the other way around. I'm curious, do we know the status of the persons that were shot? Can you provide an update on that?
Well, there was only one shooting victim, and although media outlets have reported his name and who he's affiliated with, we don't do that. But I can say he's been released from the hospital, which is a very good sign. So he has been released, and he's got a long road of recovery ahead of him. I'm pretty certain of that. So that's a good piece of news. The investigation into this case continues. We are still interviewing people who initially we talked to that night, but we're going back and asking follow-up questions. So there was a lot of people in that business that night, and so When that happens, we have to really work hard to find everybody that we can identify and who's willing to give us a statement. And so that work continues.
How long do investigations like this take? Is it several months, or do you think that'll wrap up pretty soon?
You know, there's forensics that are occurring, so evidence that was collected and turned into the laboratory for analysis, that can go on for quite some time, especially when DNA services are being requested. Sometimes these investigations actually continue after charging, after trial dates have been set, right up until the trial day or the date that the trial begins. So there's always little bits of information trickling in. There's new pieces of information that we didn't know about before that come up. And so we always have to follow up on that. So it could take months. It could take over a year. It's just hard to predict at this stage.
All right. Again, we're talking with Director Dennis Butler here, Riley County Police Department. We have another caller calling in, so we'll go to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Yes. With all of your experience, I hate to say, but with the gun and other types of breaking in and crimes, the young kids have those games that they're playing, Fast and Furious and the different shooting games, where they're taught to shoot each other and break into cars and steal and run from the police and shoot the police. And I think that this is a major contributor to the crime problems, as well as the availability of the guns. And the cars are sitting right there in the parking lot to be broken into, you know. But it's the training of the young people and what's going on in society. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Well, I appreciate your comment. You know, I don't have any specific information to verify what you just said. I've heard other people make similar comments, and there may be something to it. From my perspective, based on my experience throughout my career dealing with anybody who's troubled, whether it's a youth or an adult, I think when you learn more about their background, how they were raised, their associations, there's a lot of other factors that go into the decision to engage in criminal behavior. And they're not always the same for everybody. Sometimes drugs are involved, mental health issues are involved, you know, difficult home life. There's a lot of things that affect when people go out and violate the laws and the norms of society that then get us involved. But I do appreciate your insight.
We're going to take our final break of the show here this morning. More with Director Butler in a moment on News Radio KMAN.